Here's a story of a professor gone fishing. Middlebury College professor Matthew Dickerson, along with David O'Hara, gets readers out of the classroom and into the great outdoors with the book Downstream, Reflections on Brook Trout, Fly Fishing, and the Waters of Appalachia. The book takes the fishermen to the waters of Maine, New York, Pennsylvania, Kentucky, Tennessee, and North Carolina. Matthew Dickerson joins us now from the studios of Middlebury College, and thank you so much for speaking with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
So why write a book about fishing, and how long have you been involved with the sport?
Well, I've been fishing probably since I was 7 or 8 years old, and fly fishing since maybe I was 16 or 17. But why I wrote the book, it's a book in which narratives about fishing provide the opportunity to explore things that are maybe much more meaningful and deep and significant to the whole human condition, as well as human relationships with nature.
So it's really more of a spiritual journey than just a technical book about fly fishing, let's say.
That's a very good description. It is not a technical book about fly fishing at all. If you wanted to get a guide where to fish in New England, this would not be the book to go to. I mean, a careful reader can probably pick up hints about good places to fish, but that's not the point.
The opening chapter of the book talks about the state of Maine and some of the pollution that was in the rivers there and how that's actually been cleared out. How did that happen? Did Mainers rally to clear the waters of vacation land, as it's known?
The story of the Androscoggin River is one of the more hopeful stories of the book. In the early 1970s, it was listed as one of the 10 filthiest rivers in all of the United States by Time magazine. It was a river that carried raw sewage from towns upstream, that carried the refuse from the paper mill industry. And I think a big part of the cleanup was actually the Clean Water Act, which, you know, made some of those very unhealthy practices simply illegal. And given time, you know, rivers do have an ability to begin to wash themselves clean, especially a river like the Androscoggin that carries that much clean water out of the mountains.
I'm curious about some of the people that you must have met along the way here. Who are some of the more memorable characters that you met during your travels?
We worked with some fascinating guides that we talked to or fished with, or just very stoic personalities, very sparse with their words. You really had to pry them and ask questions to get them to say anything at all. But when they talked, they were just a wealth of knowledge. They were people who cared deeply about the rivers that they fished. They're not just out fishing and guiding to make a quick buck. They're fishing and guiding because they love being on the water. They love the insects and the birds and the trees and the landscape. And they love sharing those things with other people. There's a guide, Mark Scarborough, that we fished with down in the mountains of Eastern Tennessee, who just was full of great stories about times he had spent in the mountains. And he knew more about the names of the birds and the trees and the flowers than anybody I've ever met.
Professor Dickerson, for those of us who don't know very much about angling, it can seem a cloistered, almost cultish kind of world. I mean, fishermen are notorious for secretly guarding the best spots. Mm-hmm. They're not really crazy about outsiders coming in. Is it hard for newbies to get involved in the recreational fishing world?
There are certain images that people have of fishing that maybe do not capture the sort of fishing I like to do. For many people, fishing means you pull up your pickup truck to a pond and you sit in a chair, very sedentary, and watch a bobber go up and down. And for some people, that's a really relaxing and enjoyable way to spend an afternoon. But for Dave and I, the type of fishing we like to do is as much hiking and tromping around a stream and turning over rocks as it is anything else. And all you really have to do, I think, to enjoy it is to be curious, to like to learn, and to be willing to pay attention to what's around you.
You make the distinction throughout the book between native fish and stocked fish. Why is this distinction important?
Well, I suppose in some ways it isn't. I mean, humans change our environment, and I don't think all the ways that we change our environment are bad. I think there's a lot to be gained from stocking fish, from replenishing fisheries that we have in some way or another depleted, or rivers that we've harmed. But there is something very special about wild fish. For one, they're smarter. They're a greater challenge to catch. I mean, a fish that was raised in a hatchery is used to humans feeding it. We kind of joke that you walk up to the shoreline and the fish swim over to you waiting to be fed. But also a self-sustaining wild fishery is just a better indication of a healthy ecosystem.
Vermonters may wonder why the Green Mountain State was not part of your journeys. Was it just too close to home, or is Vermont not an ideal place for brook trout and fly fishing?
We ended up with a lot more stories than we could fit into the book. My co-author and I actually got to be good friends over 6 years of fishing up and down Vermont. I mean, we've discovered some beautiful little mountain beaver ponds in southern Vermont. We fished streams all over Addison County and up in Chittenden County. So there are plenty of stories we could have told about Vermont. But when we did the hard work of combining all these stories and finding a narrative that fit, the most important stories that we felt like needed to be told could be told from other states.
What's the most important or surprising thing that you learned while writing this book?
Well, writing the book certainly revealed to me some of my own attitudes, especially towards technology. As a computer science professor, I have a tendency to have a very high faith in human ability to engineer anything we want to engineer, to see technology as a solution to all of our problems. So my tendency would be I look at any stream and I think, how can I make that better, engineer it to meet my desires? And I think my attitude in that area has changed somewhat over the course of writing this book. I don't so much see the natural world around me existing simply to meet my desires, and I'm a little more hesitant to think that technology will provide the solution to everything, that humans can engineer a better world.
Matthew Dickerson, along with David O'Hara, is the author of the new book, Downstream, Reflections on Brook Trout, Fly Fishing, and the Waters of Appalachia. Thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Well, thank you very much for having me.